Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
My wife Laura and I say this all the time when we meet with young leaders, because they ask that question.
Yeah.
We honestly say, I don't think we would change anything, because you have to learn through and grow through. And by the way, the first 5 years are not about growing a church. It's about growing the pastor, growing the leader.
That's right.
And then growth will become more organic. It'll happen authentically. Enjoy the journey. And you have to do that. If you're a parent, you have to enjoy every age and stage. So this is a little embarrassing, but I remember thinking, oh man, if I'm pastoring 1,000 people by the time I'm whatever age, and you just create these kind of benchmarks, but it's all a mirage. Like, you'll never reach a point where you're like, ah, I'm there. Like, there is no finish line. So it's not even going after the big dream. It's who you become in the process.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. In today's episode, Jay Pathick will be interviewing Mark Batterson, author and lead pastor of National Community Church in Washington, D.C. Let's listen in.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for joining me to hang out and talk. I can see you sitting in your office, and tell us a little bit about where you are.
Can you tell I like books?
I can tell you. Well, me too. I think it's the standard pastor backdrop is books.
It might be.
That's the rule.
It might be. So I'm in my office, only been here for about 2 years. My former office of 16 years was above our coffee house at Ebenezer's, and about 1/8 the size of this, it was a cubbyhole.
Yeah.
But this is our Capitol Hill campus, so really a miracle story. This is a little bit more than you were asking for, but did a 4.7-mile prayer walk around Capitol Hill way back in 1996. Wow. We had 13 people the week before, Jay. And I was pretty desperate. Wasn't praying for property, was praying for people. And 29 years later, we own 7 properties. We never thought we would own property, but
hard to do.
Right now, I'm in a city block that somehow, some way, we got for $29.3 million. And it's land is hard to come by on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
So 20 years we did church in rented facilities, primarily in movie theaters at Metro stops. But the Lord just started entrusting these properties to us. And it might be fun to talk a little bit more about what we're doing with this property at some point, because one of our core convictions is church belongs in the middle of the marketplace. So for a lot of years, that was meeting in movie theaters. But that's why we built a coffee house, a place where church and community could cross paths. And then we just give every penny of profit to kingdom causes. And then this facility is actually an event venue. And so, if it's a friend like World Vision, IJM, Prison Fellowship, come and use our space for free. But about 150 events last year that it might be DC government, it might be an organization, corporate event, concert, it revenue streamed $1.7 million last year. And almost all of that is free and clear. And so where I'm going with that, urban church is tricky. The cost of property, the cost of, you know, what we do, it's hard. So we've got to get creative, think outside the box, but kind of fun. We got this property 18 years to the day from the day of that prayer circle, Jay. So you can't make stuff up like that. I'm a guy that, call me old fashioned, I believe in the power of prayer. I think prayer is how we write history before it happens. So I think we just hit the ground running.
Dude, I love it. So, okay. So tell me a little bit, because people may or may not know you, where you kind of grew up, how you kind of made your way into ministry. Cause now you're doing all this crazy stuff. Like, where'd you grow up and how did you end up in this thing to begin with?
Well, I'm a Midwest guy, kind of like you.
All right.
So born in Minneapolis, lived in Wisconsin, but grew up really in the Chicago area. And actually went to University of Chicago undergrad, played some basketball there. I was a Pearl major, politics, economics, rhetoric, and law. And between my freshman and sophomore year, man, I heard that inaudible yet unmistakable voice of God. I knew I was called to ministry. So I ended up giving up a full ride scholarship at the USC, transferred to a little Bible college that doesn't even exist anymore. Central Bible College in Springfield, Missouri. And just started pursuing what I felt was a calling. Went to Trinity up in north of Chicago for seminary, had an advisor named Wayne Grudem, who I think we both know. And actually tried to plant a church there, Jay. And my professor, I did a 25-year plan, and my professor gave it an A, but probably should have given it an F because it failed.
That's funny.
But I will say this, learned a couple of valuable lessons. Unless the Lord builds the house, they who labor, labor in vain. And the cure for the fear of failure is not success. I think it's failure in small enough doses that you build up an immunity to it.
Dude, that's good.
So when that church plant kind of fell through, we were like, Lord, where do we go? What do we do? And that's how we ended up packing everything into a U-Haul and moving out to D.C. No place to live, no guaranteed salary, just kind of a faith move. And I guess the rest is history.
Why? So just, D.C., you had a sense of calling? You had a word from God?
It's one of those, God works in strange and mysterious ways. I had never even been to D.C., but my college roommate was a youth pastor just outside the city. We just came out to visit him. And Jay, we're driving down Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House to the Capitol. And I don't know. I knew that I knew. I could take you right to the spot where I just felt like, I think this is where we're going to spend the rest of our lives. And after that one failed church plant, we kind of said, one, Lord, would you give us a second chance? And two, can we just pastor one church for the rest of our lives? So we've been, that would have been, we moved out here in 94, but then started the church core group of 19 people in January of 96.
Okay. So it's interesting the way you described your story, because I was recently talking to a venture capital business guy, and he's been helping us think about some of what we do in the Vineyard. And he said to me, you know, Jay, here's something I can't figure out about you guys, which is when a church plant fails, you guys all grieve and are like super sad, and everybody has to figure out what happened, and it's like limitless trauma. And I don't think, maybe you don't understand how like startups really work. Like, I basically don't invest in a startup unless they've had a few failures. Like, maybe you don't get how it works. Like, that's how a leader develops. And so as a venture guy, I only invest in people who have failed a few times. Like, why do I want to pay for their education?
Wow. That's fascinating. So I often say to young leaders, I pray failure for you. Listen, not moral failure. Moral failure.
Of course not.
But you have to try some things that fall through, because that's how you discover that God's there to pick you up, dust you off, give you a second chance, and then hopefully more of your ego is out of the way. And but that's, wow, what a fascinating litmus test. I do think, 9 times out of 10, failure is poorly managed success. And 9 times out of 10, success is well-managed failure. Yes. So, yes. You know, there's something about just taking a learning posture, a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And I would even say this to the church planters out there, because, you know, we know from statistically, half of churches that plant don't make it 5 years in. Yeah. But that's still 5x what it is in business world. I think 1 out of 10 businesses only make it a year.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think faith is taking the first step before God reveals the second step.
Yeah.
So I think some of us want that money back guarantee. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, it took more courage to do the second attempt, Jay, mm-hmm. because if you fail once, it might be an anomaly. If you fail twice, it might be saying something about you. Yes. So we had to dig deep.
I bet.
We had to dig deep, but just so grateful for these past 29 years.
And say more about, you started into it, say more about urban church planting. So, you know, you are where you are now, which is not where you were when you started. And one of the main obstacles people talk about, though there are many, is the fact that facilities are nearly impossible. So we have to rent the random movie theater / nightclub / community room at the condo complex and And it feels like such a slog, they talk to their church planting friends who are in, some rural part of the Midwest or the Southeast, and they just went in and bought their 8 acres and started their building. And they're like, what would that even be like? How would I even get that? And so tell me about how you thought about being nimble, agile, creative, because you mentioned just very quickly, and I mentioned you before we started recording. I've been to the Ebenezer Coffee House. I went to see some of what you were doing, and what struck me was all these small rooms. It's like you multiplied through a bunch of small rooms.
We did
a pretty big church, I was like, wow, this takes a lot of creativity. Like, that's not something you would just naturally, or at least I wouldn't naturally come up with. So talk about how you did that. How did that, some of it's a necessity, but how did you build a culture that was willing to experiment like that?
Yeah. Well, let's talk urban kind of city environment. But I do want to say for the record, I genuinely think the heroes of the kingdom are pastoring 50 people, 70 people, 80 people in communities where that's huge impact.
Yes.
And from marrying to burying, they are pastoring and loving. And, we plant and water, God gives the increase. So I think you just got to be faithful. You got to be where your feet are. And then you got to be faithful. For us, our context is Washington, D.C. Mm. Our theology of the city, and I think it's important to start there, is Jeremiah 29. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city. If it prospers, you will prosper. So we're not just trying to build a church. We're trying to bless the city to the third and fourth generation. So, Jay, we built a $5 million dream center in Ward 7 in our city. Mm. 64 programs operate out of that dream center, trying to change statistics one kid at a time. Church that stays within its four walls isn't a church at all. We want to be in the community. We want to be meeting real needs in real time. But then the thing that strikes me, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, pastors who, you preach this passage, but, he says, build houses and plant gardens. Yeah. Jeremiah was rebuking Hananiah, a false prophet, who said, you're only going to be there 2 years. Well, if you have a two-year mindset, you aren't even going to unpack your suitcase. You're going to rent the city. But if you're going to be there 70 years, now you have to think about playing the long game. And so I was blessed marrying a pastor's daughter. And I saw long obedience in the same direction, planted and pastored a church for more than 30 years. And that was really the model of ministry. So the reality is we overestimate what we can accomplish in a year or two, underestimate what God can do in 10 or 20. So we thought we're gonna play the long game. And initially, we never thought we would own property. So we just had this idea. We were meeting in the movie theaters at Union Station, and we met there for 13 years. And we were thousands of people, but not a singular gathering. Most of our gatherings, Jay, were 200 people, right. 250 people, 300 people. You know, we had eight campuses, and then I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but about 5 years ago, I was on a silent retreat and I felt like the Lord said, do more things that don't have your name on it. We have launched our campuses as network churches.
Yeah.
It was scary. It's scary because you do church a certain way for 20 years.
Yes.
And in fact, multi-site is kind of your middle name.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just felt like the Lord was taking us in a different direction. And so at the end of the day, I think there are lots of different ways of doing church.
Yeah.
And they aren't all just like better or worse. They're just, every church has unique church print. And by the way, not about the name over the church door, about the name above all names. Like you brought up our mutual friend, Aaron Graham, who pastors the district church. Aaron and I are part of a little group that we have about 70, 80 pastors that meet every quarter, usually at our Dream Center. And we just love each other and encourage each other. And, you know, try to have a kingdom mindset instead of just about me, myself, and I.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. So you went from a ton of little gatherings, planting churches, and this is the part where you're tempted to be humble and diminish yourself. And so I'm gonna try to get you to resist that. Like, why were people come to your church? Like, lots of people are doing church. You pop in out of the Midwest, you're meeting in a million small gatherings. You can even, if you need to, for the purposes of question, pretend like you're somebody else talking about your church if you need to. But just, but I mean, I think it's just helpful for people to go, yeah, here's what God gave us grace to do so that others can learn, right?
Yeah.
There's so few innovators, as you know. That's me included. I don't think I've had an original thought ever. I've learned how to be a really good thief. I'm a good thief and I'm a good synthesizer. Yeah. So I like watch what smart people do and I can pick it up quickly and then I can join it with other stuff. So that's why it's helpful to hear from people who are doing things like you're doing. So like how did you get there?
Yeah, we're cut from the same cloth. I think you hack other people's habits.
Right.
But then, and then you put your thumbprint on it.
Yes.
So that it just has your unique expression. Maybe I can answer that by just sharing one story.
Great.
It took 5 years for us to grow from that core group of 19 people into what I would call a critical mass of 250 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happened 5 years in. A Washington Post reporter reached out to me. And we had flown under the radar this whole time, and they discovered that we were 80% single 20-somethings, which I didn't know was such an anomaly,
right?
But they considered it newsworthy. And so kind of fun. She interviewed me, said, hey, check out the paper this weekend. It might be in the religion section. And so I walk into Union Station where we're doing church, go to the newsstand. And at first, I was a little disappointed we weren't in the religion section. So I folded it back up, put it back on the newsstand, because if we weren't in it, I wasn't going to buy it for $1.50.
You're a church planner. You don't have any money. Yeah,
nope.
I get it. Right.
And, and that's when I discovered that we were on the front page of the Washington Post.
Wow, weird.
And I used to joke that it must have been a slow news day. And then the Lord convicted me.
Yeah.
Jay, it wasn't a slow news day. It was God's time. It was God's favor. It was God's moment, I think, to put us on the map. And so that next year we doubled in size, and then we kind of never looked back. But what I love about it is, like, we can't take credit for that. Yeah. We just, you got to do the right things day in and day out. Keep praying, keep discipling people, keep sharing your faith, keep exercising your creative muscles. You know, keep preaching every message with fire shut up in your bones. Like, keep doing what you're doing, and trust God for the timing. We plant water, God gives the increase. So really, that's what we've been doing for 29 years. And now what is unique is that between election cycles, 4 years, well, 2 years in the House, 4 years, 6 years in the Senate, military tours, which are often 4 years, students, maybe 4 years. Our church historically is turned over every 4 years. It's actually a little bit higher than that. That would be 25% turnover per year, but we have historically averaged about 33% turnover based on surveys. So at first we were like, how are we ever going to grow a church?
Right.
But we embraced it and said, hey, we get to send people all around the world all the time. If they're working over at state, we might get to send them to another country. If they're on a military tour or an elected official, you know, we may get them for a chunk of time. And so what a joy. We have ministered to tens and thousands of people over 29 years. And it's just the unique context that we're in. DC is incredibly transient. And by the way, 23% of people who live in the DC area are foreign born. And so we want to be every nation, tribe, people, language, kind of this multicultural expression that we see gathered around the throne of God. And that's what we've become over 29 years.
This summer, Vineyard USA is hosting our national conference, Melody and Harmony, in two locations, Denver, Colorado on June 16th through 19th and Cincinnati, Ohio on July 14th through 17th. We hope that by offering two locations and dates, everyone, pastors, leaders, volunteers, even those just curious about the Vineyard, that everyone will be able to find a time to join us. The conference will also have specific programming for adults, youth, and kids. As far as our theme, throughout history, the Lord has been composing a beautiful melody through the story of his people and his church. And for the past 50 years, the Vineyard Movement has had the privilege of adding its own unique harmony to this grand symphony. Registration's now open, so make sure to check out vineyardusa.org to learn more and register today.
Okay, so here's a question that you could answer a lot of different ways. If you could go back, you said you planted 95, was that right?
96.
96. If you could go back and talk to that version of yourself who's starting, and you could say something, you can't say like buy Apple stock. I mean, like something about like like their life and their ministry.
Yeah.
What would you want to say? Because so many are on the front end, right? Like,
yeah.
And what they do is they look at you, they look at people who are building churches, and they go, oh man, I want to do that. But the problem is you have to be you. You can't be that without being another version of you. But
yeah.
So what would you want to say to yourself in a way that, like, if you get like 5 minutes in a coffee shop, like, that could accelerate your growth, your learning, your development?
Yep. I'll answer it, but I do want to flip it. I'm curious what you would say. So collect your thoughts.
Okay, I will. I'm ready. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Here's what I would say.
Yeah.
My wife, Laura, and I say this all the time when we meet with young leaders, because they ask that question.
Yeah.
And we honestly say, I don't think we would change anything because... you have to learn through and grow through. And by the way, the first 5 years are not about growing a church. It's about growing the pastor, growing the leader.
That's right.
And then growth will become more organic. It'll happen authentically.
Yes.
But I would say a couple of things. One, enjoy the journey. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that. If you're a parent, you have to enjoy every age and stage. So this is a little embarrassing, but I remember thinking, oh man, if I'm pastoring 1,000 people by the time I'm whatever age, right. And you just create these kind of benchmarks, but it's all a mirage. Like you'll never reach a point where you're like, ah, I'm there. Like there is no finish line. So it's not even going after the big dream. It's who you become in the process.
Yes.
So I think you have to enjoy the journey. And then the other thing I would say is that the blessings of God will complicate your life. Mm-hmm. So when Laura and I got married, complicated our lives. We have 3 complications, Parker, Summer, and Josiah. When we went multi-site, it complicated our lives. Yep. Sin will complicate your life in a way it shouldn't be complicated.
Yep.
Like don't trade your birthright for that bowl of stew. Just don't do it. Mm-hmm. But blessings will complicate your life in the way it should be complicated.
Yeah.
And what God is doing is growing you. And so what's funny, the things that stressed me out like 10 years ago, 20 years ago would be like a sabbatical these days. Like, I mean, it would be like a walk through the park because the stakes only get higher.
Yes.
And in some ways it doesn't get easier. Like, well, I'll put on my writing hat.
Hmm.
Like, I've written 25 books. So, like, hopefully, book 25 is easier than 24 or 19 or 7. But, like, tell that to a woman who's had multiple babies. Like, you still have to go through labor and delivery. So, in the sense, it doesn't get easier. I think God grows capacity within us.
Yep.
And so enjoy the journey. Blessings of God will complicate your life. Jay, how would you answer that?
Well, the thing you said at the beginning is what I believe to be true, which is at the end of all of this, what God gets out of you is your life, like who you've become.
Mm.
Yeah. That's what he gets out of it. He wants you like he wants you. And as much as he gets of you, he'll get stuff out of you. But how much of you are you prepared to surrender to God? And he's way more interested in a way that I don't think any of us can entirely fathom who you're becoming versus what you're doing. Because if you're becoming something, all the things you want to do happen in certain ways. And the bad news of that, which ends up being good news, is the majority of that lasting transformation will happen in suffering.
Yeah.
It's going to happen in the way you don't want it to come. And that becomes the load limit of your ministry. Is you said it in, you know, you have to be able to like manage failure appropriately. You have to be able to metabolize different kinds of suffering and disappointment and loss. You have to be able to metabolize that. And that only happens with God and with some people, a few people. And so that it's mostly loss. How are you going to process loss and suffering? That's where most of the real change happens. And it makes you the kind of person that can manage more of the weight of the glory of the Lord. God loves you too much to put his weight on you if it's going to kill you. He just loves you. He doesn't want to kill you. So he's gonna keep shoring you up in such a way that he can put more weight on you. And if you don't let him do that, you'll harm yourself and you'll harm other people. Don't lose track of that. And then the second thing always for me, and maybe it's just my wiring and it sounds like it's yours, is you have to pay attention to the lost and the marginalized as the essential targets for your life. Everything in ministry has an entropy to it that will move you toward more sophisticated Christian stuff. And that doesn't mean there isn't going to be some of that in your own personal development, nor in the way you disciple people. But if somehow it doesn't land toward those who are far from Christ and the disorder and the remaking of the world, I don't think it's going to mean as much in the end. And it, everything will draw you away from it. You can keep building a church that just drives people deeper into like Christian thoughts and thinking and life and ministry. And if it doesn't end with our neighborhoods, our workplaces, those who have the least chances and those who are farthest from Christ, exactly what you said. I don't know what that is, but I'm not sure it's a church. It can be a country, it could be a country club. Country clubs are nice. But I want to build churches. And so for pastors, when they're not doing well, they're either not metabolizing suffering well, or they're not seeing enough of the winning on the edge. Like for me, I mean, we just baptized some folks that we've been sharing our faith with for over a decade.
Wow.
In the same week, I had any number of horrible things happen that are just hard. Losses, things that didn't go the way I wanted them to go.
Yep.
Hurt, broken relationships that I don't know how to repair. My efforts aren't working. But then we see some people come to Christ, and all of a sudden I'm like, all right.
Yep.
I got another run in me. I can do this.
You live to fight another day.
That's right.
Yeah.
I can take another lap.
I wonder, can I lean in right there?
Sure,
that, you know, I think that suffering piece, no one wants to hear that.
No.
But one of the big lessons Laura and I have learned in recent years. So Laura's had two bouts with cancer in the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. And we're on the other side. Like we're 4 years out from the second bout, and in a good spot. But we have learned to forgive reality for what it is. Like it is what it is.
Yep.
And I think we love each other more and love each other better. Like, does that mean we want a third bout? Absolutely not.
Well, thank you.
But I think it's growing through it and leaning into the Lord. And then on the loss front, like, I mean, I had to get counseling coming out of COVID. We went a year and 2 weeks that we couldn't gather by DC government mandate. And I mean, we had 1,500 people evaporate into thin air. It was loss.
Yes.
And so so I had to get grief counseling.
Yep.
And it was a wise pastor who said, Mark, what you're experiencing is grief.
Yes.
And so I just think, but I think that's where I think half of our job as preachers is to humanize ourselves.
Yeah.
And when I've shared the hard things, like people love a success story, but you know what they love even more? A failure story.
Right. Totally.
Because like we need to know I'm not the only one that struggles with that, wrestles with that. But so I think there's a lot of wisdom there. And then I think one of our core convictions is God's going to bless us in proportion to how we care for the poor in our city and give to missions.
Yes.
So we're going to prioritize kingdom causes, especially those that don't have our name on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jay, my wife is on the board of Prison Fellowship, and I've had the joy of being her plus one. Went to prison for the first time a few months ago, and I have never felt the presence of God like that. It was so real. It was so visceral. I'll never forget John and Bobby sharing their testimonies. I'll never forget their worship band leading us in this song, Hard Fought Hallelujah. Like, wow. Wow. So I do think, Matthew 25 is where it's at.
Yep. That's right, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's easy to lose track. You know, when you, you know, I can't remember which pastor said it, but it's, you know, that the work at some point in ministry, the work is ignoring people who are talking to listen for those who are not. Like unchurched people, I've never gotten the voicemail that says, hey, listen, you know, my marriage is a mess. I don't know how to parent my kids. If someone would invite me, I might come and I might meet Christ and it might not just change my life, but the lives of my whole family. Anyway, that's my voicemail, Pastor. If there's any way you could get back to me, like I've never gotten that voicemail. But I do get the voicemail that says, hey, you know, you had the wrong diapers in the nursery, and do you guys even know what you're doing? And, you know, I have this minor point about your sermon that I wonder if you've even read this other theologian. And by the way, you know, there was a pothole in the parking lot, and I just wonder, what does my money even go to? Okay, so I get, you know,
You know, can I give a gift right now? One of my favorite words is ultra crepidarianism. And it's claiming expertise in something you know nothing about.
Yes.
It's amazing how those who have never preached a sermon.
Right.
And by the way, I will say this, that I feel like with some of the political polarization, sure, some of the racial tension, just the cultural moment that we're in, like no matter what I say, it's never enough and it's always too much.
Yes. Like exactly. That's just called living.
It is. And that's where you can't take your cues from trending hashtags. You have to live out of the biblical convictions that God's given you.
Yes.
And DC might be a harder place to do that than some other places because political correctness is the order of the day.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what you do. I mean, and yet, again, I see my friends come to Christ. They bring their family this week, and I'm standing with them up front after they've just seen their friend baptized, and they go, wow, this is amazing. A group of people who pray together and serve, and you know, and we'd had a testimony that day of someone who'd come through a recovery process, and then you know, we have kids we've been sponsoring with Compassion and the deal, and we're giving an update on that, and these people who just do their normal lives walk in and go, there's a place that people do this. Man, I want to be a part of this. This is so encouraging. And when you know, and I, you know, I wasn't raised in church. And so, you know, me coming to Christ changed everything. And I get to watch that all the time. You get to watch that all the time. But you get distracted by what seems insurmountable and the challenges and the difficulties. And so for me, if as a pastor, I can stay focused on, if I can, I got to do some work. I got to respond to those emails. I do get those voicemails. I got to, you know, you can't just act like it's not there. You got to do some of it, but that can't occupy your vision, your heart. If I can keep pushing leaders, including myself, toward those margins, there's so much fruit and there's so much favor.
Yep.
Like what you described, the Lord will bless us to the degree that we care for the poor, we're invested in missions, we see lost people coming home. There's a reason we get distracted. There is an actual enemy. So that's not just sociological. So I agree. Well, Mark, listen, I want to make sure we get some time to learn from you in some other ways. You have only 25 books. I feel like you've really been underachieving. If you could step it up a little bit, maybe we can read some more. But you also you're an incredible communicator. I just want to commend you to our movement. People should be listening to you, learning from you. And then hopefully we can trick you into showing up at something we're doing at some point and learn from you more. I hope I can find a way to do that.
I would love it. And every pastor is an interim pastor. Like even if you get to pastor the same church for 30, 40, 50 years, and pastors need pastors. I have a spiritual father. former church planner, former college president, 83 years old, 83 years young.
Yeah.
So we need each other, like, and it would be an absolute joy to spend some time. The Vineyard's near and dear to my heart. I can't say this about everybody, but just the mix of the Word and Spirit, I think is a beautiful. You found the right combination of salt and pepper, or whatever you want to call it. Just the joy and thanks so much, Jay.
Yeah, I'm grateful to you. Well, I'll chase you down and see if I can make you do more for us. If you be able and willing, really grateful.
Sounds good.
All right,
love it.
The We Are Vineyard podcast is a production from the team at Vineyard USA. If you've been enjoying the podcast, here are a few ways you can help us. Leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choice. This helps more people find us. Connect with us online for additional resources. Our website is vineyardusa.org, and we're on Instagram, Facebook, and X @VineyardUSA. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.